Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 67 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And welcome to this podcast. We want to say a big warm welcome to all of our new listeners. Over the last few weeks, our listenership has gone up and up and up to various factors, mainly because of the big shout out we got on the Film 4 Twitter feed a while back. And it's improved our listenership so much that our recent episode where we reviewed Moonlight has broken the 100,000 download barrier, which we've never done before for one of our own individual episodes.
Podomatic, you probably don't know this, has a 100,000 members club. So there's not many, there's about five or six podcasts on their whole network of millions. Now we are officially in that for our own. So when you go on there, you see our artwork for the Moonlight episode and it says, skip to the end, 100,000 club.
Celebrate good
times, come
on.
I don't know if we get any membership cards or if we get any, like, you know, some treats from them. Or
I kind of want a smoking jacket.
I think we should have that. That would be
cool
with it embroidered on the back. 100K club, then just STTE.
That'd be sexy. Perfect.
I've already put it on my email signature at work, even though my work has absolutely nothing to do with podcasting, but I think the people need to know.
Yeah. I'm putting it initials after my actual title name, so I'm going by deed poll.
Nice.
Nice.
Speaking of that, when people put initials after their name, doesn't it annoy you when people put BA or BSc?
Yeah.
It's like, they're not worth the paper they're printed on, bachelors.
And, yes. And the only time BA is acceptable is when Baracus is after that.
Exactly. Correct. If you're in the A-team, you can have it. Apart from that, stop being a twat and just put your name.
Yeah, anyway. getting back on task. So to all of our new listeners, we do hope that you stick around. If you want to get involved, we are big on listener interaction here. So follow us on Twitter at STTE Podcast and have a look at us on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Let's talk about what you're going to hear on this episode then. Gemma, what are we reviewing?
We're going to be reviewing Get Out, a film that apparently has got 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's actually gone down to 99% now because of one jackass reviewer, a guy called Armin White, who is known to be an absolute troll. Great films, he says, are shit. Shit films like Transformers, he'll buzz his tits off about.
Armin White, yeah. Armin Shite.
Correct.
Nice.
Look how she did that.
Thank you.
So to our new listeners, that is the standard of jokes.
Stick around for much, much more.
2 hours of this coming up.
That is the kind of stuff we can do. So, Mark, what is our topic of conversation?
It's going to be our top three survival films. And I think the net is very wide on this one for choices.
Yeah. We're going to have to kind of decide what we consider to be a survival film and what not.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we can justify our choices, though, I think we're golden, aren't we?
Yeah.
We run this show, so we could justify Mac and Me being a survival film because he survives from the humans.
Well, he says that.
And the little fella survives the fall off the top of the
cliff
his wheelchair. Yeah.
So, you know.
So that's good. I'm going to have to rewrite my list. So that's going in. Our rewatch this time around is L.A. Confidential. Just a damn fine film, and I cannot wait to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Really, really looking
forward to talking
about
it. You're spoiling it.
I know.
Wait around to find out if Ben really means what he just said.
Is it a double bluff?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
That's it, man. Yeah, I could be sharking you here. Who are we movie masturbating over this time, Gemma?
Oh, we're going to be spaffing over Sigourney Weaver.
Vile. Vile way of putting it.
It's degrading.
Is that not what we're doing?
I am trying to mould this podcast. So you can probably notice I've matured quite a lot over the last 2 hours.
Bullshit.
But we want to try and aim for the family market as well. So all those new listeners, get your kids along, get your grandparents along. Mm-hmm. Have a listen.
So are we or are we not spaffing?
No, we're just mass debating over her.
Correct. Okay.
Got to get them numbers up.
Exactly.
Get the families in. Up, 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 up. I won't be happy until we get 500,000. Mark, what's our game show this week?
All I'm going to do is tell you the name.
Yeah.
It's High Five.
High five.
I can't wait for this one.
I'm terrified.
It's going to be insane.
Terrified as to what this is going to entail. Before we move on to the show itself, though, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. Not only are we expanding and getting more listeners, we're also available in more outlets. So we've recently been put onto TuneIn.com. So if you access the TuneIn website or if you have a TuneIn app on your phone and whatnot, you can find the Skip to the End podcast. Not only that, though, you can also access TuneIn on the Amazon Echo device.
That's the what device?
The Amazon Echo device from the good people at Amazon.
Right, so I'm going to go on Amazon.co. I'm just sitting here now.
Yeah.
Great.
Wow, that is... And you can only get it on Amazon.
Amazon Echo. Oh. And weirdly enough, I already have one.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
That's coincidence.
So I just want to make a demonstration of how this would work. So Alexa, play the Skip to the End podcast.
Skip to the End. Getting the latest episode. Here it is from TuneIn.
Oh my God,
wow.
This is a game changer.
We're in there now. We're in there now.
It's crazy, isn't it? This age we live in.
Be honest now, Ben, while you're like on while you're here right now, how many times have you done that this week?
Like 50. Because I just refused to believe that it worked. I was like, that can't be real.
But that's amazing.
But the thing is about our friend over here, not only can she play podcasts, she's also a big, big movie buff.
Ooh. Bollocks.
Now, trust me. Alexa, what is Mac and Me?
Mac and Me is a 1988 American science fiction adventure film co-written and directed by Stuart Trifle about a mysterious alien creature that escapes from nefarious NASA agents and is befriended by a boy who uses a wheelchair due to paraplegia.
Wow.
Thanks, Alexa. See? She knows her stuff.
I would never buy one of these and use it to play music because as soon as it started, I'd stop. Right, I'm going to ask it about Tommy Wiseau. I'm going to ask it about The Room. I'm going to ask it about everything. This is incredible.
It's an incredible piece of equipment, isn't it? And but my worry is I love it and I've been using it a lot, but I worry that I'm maybe 6 weeks away from a Joaquin Phoenix in Her type situation, that I'm just going to fall in love with her and then my life will go to shit.
Don't fall in love
you
with
aren't
her.
The only one for her. I've seen these sell everywhere. You're not the only one.
Really? Mm-hmm. Harlot.
She's cheating on me already.
How dare she?
Oh dear.
I'll stick up for you, Ben. I'm not having to do that to my mates.
Moving on to more earthbound concerns. Gemma, you've been to Scotland, haven't you, since the last episode?
Oh, hi.
Okay, the new.
That's Scottish for yes, I have. It was absolutely beautiful. Edinburgh is a gorgeous, gorgeous city. I drank a lot of whiskey, a lot of gin, and a lot of beer. But in my time of being in Skip to the End, I've noticed I've been very selfish in my past,
haven't
I? Yeah,
big time.
Massively.
So I've learnt my lesson, and whilst I was away in Scotland...
Is this duty-free? There's a bag.
It's on the border. I got you guys a little something. So...
That's better be good.
It is good, I promise.
Look at that. Having a go already. I know, but... I've not even seen it.
I just remembered that... did I bring you anything back from... No, I didn't. Carry on.
So, I thought I'd get you some traditional shortbread.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
That is good. That's so, Walker's mini pure butter shortbread.
Did you get us any traditional heroin?
Oh. Didn't have any skag on me.
No.
However, I have got you a traditional Scotch whiskey glass.
Oh, lovely. But, glass.
Exactly. What's better to go with an empty glass?
The thing to put in it.
Hello.
Lovely stuff. Thank
Scotch
you,
whiskey, guys.
That's amazing.
Dewar's white label whiskey.
That's Dewar's.
White label blended Scotch.
So I thought I'd bring a bit of Scotland with me to you guys.
Thank you very
much. That's
beautiful.
You're welcome.
Indeed. So let's bring a bit of Scotland and a bit of the Skip to the End podcast to the world at large. Let's get started.
Let's kick the show off today then with the topic. Let's not change the mould. If it works, let's stick with it. Mm-hmm. So it's our top three survival films. Now, Ben, I think at the intro then you picked up on what does it make a survival film, what doesn't.
Yeah.
Let's just do them and hopefully they tick the box of being a survival film because you can justify anything and mould it into the way of being a survival film. Let's be honest, you can. You can say anything is. Mm-hmm. But I think we're intelligent enough to make sure that the main theme of the film is about survival. If it isn't, I'm going to be quite concerned. And we might have to reevaluate our positions on the team. So, Ben, kick things off with me. What's your first choice?
Well, I've got a film that I can absolutely justify in a couple of ways. I'm going with Children of Men.
Oh, amazing film.
A fantastic film from 2006, directed by Alfonso Cuarón, starring Clive Owen, Julianne Moore, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Michael Caine. Tells the story of a dystopian future where women are infertile and one man must protect the first woman to become pregnant in something like 2 decades. To me, it's a survival film from 2 angles. On one angle, you've got Clive Owen trying to protect this pregnant woman. He's trying to make this one woman survive the onslaught that's coming against her. And on the macro scale, it's also about the survival of the human race. The fact that no children have been born for 20 years and this is the first chance of extending the human race. It's all about the survival of the species as much as this one woman. So there you go, justified. You can't argue with that. Yep. It's a survival film.
Tick.
But it's also just a fantastic, fantastic film. It was, I think, maybe the first Cuarón film I saw and I was blown away by his directorial style. you feel as though you're in it. You never feel like you're watching a film. You feel like you're part of the action. It's almost like a documentary. And one of the things he does to draw you into that is that he uses a lot of handheld camera shots. So you're there up close and personal, you know, the old shaky cam. And something that this film is known for are the long one-take tracking shots. So the most famous one is the car chase scene. So you've got the guys, Julianne Moore, Clive Owen, and those in a car, and then they're being attacked by a group of guys on motorbikes. And you're cutting back and forth, or you're seeing back and forth between the guys on the bikes, the people in the car, the four different people in the car, the camera's circling around up and over. And I think the whole scene is something like 4 minutes long without any noticeable cuts. And it's breathtaking. Have you all seen the scene that I'm referring
yes.
to?
Yes.
I have. I haven't seen this film for a while.
Yeah.
Mm. I need to refresh a bit.
Absolutely. And the scene is mind-blowing. And even more mind-blowing is on the making-of featurette, which I think you can find on YouTube. It shows you how they did this, how they had to design a new rig to use to make it work. They basically sliced off the top of the car and put in this rig where the cinematographer, which was the great Emmanuel Lubezki, could sit. And there was one point where apparently Cuaron said, "This is too much work. It's going to cost us a lot of money. We'll just do it with effects." And Lubezki said, "No. No, I'm doing this the right way. We're building a rig. I'm sitting on the damn car and I'm going to make it work." And it's a jaw-dropping scene.
It is a gorgeous scene. I love the whole one-take scenes mm-hmm. as well. More.
And the thing is, that's the one that gets all the credit, but there's a longer one. There's a six-minute one-take scene near the back end of the film where Clive Owen's character is in this refugee camp and he's walking around and there's kind of a war broke out between the British Army and the refugees. And it's a six-minute take of him ducking bullets, ducking into buses, out of buses, into buildings, up the floor, walls are exploding. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
Clive Owen, man.
I miss him.
Well, I was going to say, he's not doing much, is yeah. he? Is he...
He did a TV series in America not so long ago called The Nick, where he played a doctor, and it was quite highly rated, and it was created and directed by Steven Soderbergh, but I never saw any of it, so I don't know if it was any good or not, but I've not seen him in a film in a long while.
He's actually Dr. Nick.
Hey, everybody!
Is that actually the truth?
I don't believe the show was named after the character's name, no.
But it's a shame, because that is... by far his greatest performance in film and Children of Men, I mm-hmm. think. You know, yeah. if he's ever pulled out, it's just him and over, that's it. No talking topic, that's just done for movie masturbate. Yeah. But he's just gone away, and like you said, he's doing TV, but he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do any shit where everyone's just gone, "Oh, write him off now, he's done."
He's not been banished anywhere, has he?
He hasn't any alleged... You know.
Don't start
no.
that.
Nope. No.
It might have been that episode of Extras he did. Maybe that was the beginning of the end. I don't know.
With the death knell of Clive Owen. Yeah.
The interesting thing about this film is a lot of it takes place in a society where the borders have been closed and refugees are seen as criminals and a disgrace and no one wants them. You know, it's a shocking thing and it's a good job that doesn't happen anywhere in the world right now, isn't it?
Yeah, that would be...
Yeah, it's a good job that's crazy dystopian science fiction and not real and happening yeah. right now,
oh,
isn't
stories.
It?
Let's just pray that that never happens to us or any other country, especially across the pond. That would be disastrous.
Oh, wouldn't it just?
God.
What a great start. And that is a film that I will watch again soon mm-hmm. because it's just, I just remember watching it. I think I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we talked on the John Carpenter last week when we did him for the reboots and you were saying that everyone's got lazy nowadays. And that's just amazing that they cut the top off and he still went ahead and done it. And I still think now, even though that film's probably 10 years old, we've just got lazy. Everyone is getting so lazy now, they wouldn't, like you said, even the director turned around and went, "No, let's just not bother."
Yeah.
But he was that kind of, I want to follow this through.
Exactly, I want to do it right.
It's got beautiful grittiness to it as well when you watch
yeah.
it. Beautiful.
that was a sexual,
grit.
I love grit. Come on then, Gemma, follow that. It's a high bar to go with.
Okay, I'm going to go for a documentary. I'm going to go for Touching the Void.
Oh.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It tells the story about two British climbers and their dangerous journey up the west face of the Sayula Grande in the Peruvian Andes in the mid-80s. This film is unlike anything I've seen. You mentioned about ground rules, about how we approach this subject. So I've gone with my choices about, would I survive in these terrains and these environments? The answer's no, I wouldn't.
Not 5 minutes.
Hell no, I'd order an Uber or something like that.
You can get them up the side of the mountains.
Yeah, we'll be there in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm just turning your corner now.
The 3G up there is really good as well. Oh, we'll order it.
It is.
Moron.
But this whole film is
Carry on.
Back to the film. The whole film is told through talking heads by the real life climbers themselves, Simon Yates and Joe Simpson. And we see the account reconstructed in front of us. The film was actually shot on the same mountains as well, so it wasn't like done at, I don't know, like Snowdon or Ben Nevis. And the dramatisation is filmed to perfection. You get a feeling of the icy cold snap and the blizzards that these climbers had to face. But ultimately, it's about the choices they had to make. So the dramatization, or the real crux of this whole story, is one of the climbers had to make a decision to cut the rope to save himself because he believed the other climber on the other end of the rope was already dead. He'd been holding this rope for hours and hours. It was starting to lose light. The winds were really picking up and he's starting to get a bit of frostbite around his face. He made the choice to cut the rope. So the guy on the other end of the rope falls down an icy crevice, but he's knocked out, but he does survive. So we see two stories emerge here. We see the guy who cut the rope go back to base camp, but the guy who fell down the crevice, he's got a broken leg, so he's got to find his way home. He's practically dragging himself back up the mountain, down all these cliffs and dangers, pretty much nearly dying of death of hypothermia and loss of limbs. This film really puts you through the emotional ringers. Could you survive this? No.
No.
But it's that whole integrity of being what a human being is. It's the human spirit that gets you to that end goal. You want to get home. You want to see your friends. You want to see your family. And the end of that film, where they have that emotional reunion at base camp, is incredible. It's a real tearjerker. It really gets you in the heart nuts. It's a very hard film not to get emotionally invested in. And surprisingly enough, it won a BAFTA for its efforts.
Wow.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't, but I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
It's
That's quite sad about the whole thinking he was dead on the other end. That's quite tragic. Is it all based on a true story?
It's a true story.
It's a documentary you did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but one of these fictional documentaries they have now.
The guy who actually cut the rope, Joe Simpson, he got criticised to high heaven when they got back home. He got ostracised by the climbing community. But the guy who ultimately was on the other end of the rope, he kept backing him up and said, no, he did the right thing. If I was in his position, I would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah, he did do the right thing, because if he believed the guy dangling on the end of the rope was dead, you know, why would he then try and save him and then put his own life at risk? It's better to save one than none.
What can you do?
So the people who've been having a go at him are dicks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But leave him alone.
But fair play to this guy. He literally crawling from his hands and knees to get back to where he needed to get to. That's unheard of.
I am surprised that there's not been a Hollywood movie made of this by now, because it seems ripe.
Well, judging by our clairvoyancy, I'm pretty sure we're going to hear this about two, 3 weeks' time.
Next week time. It'll be
Spielberg.
Yeah. If you're listening, Hollywood.
Wow. Well, I'm going to follow up with kind of a similar sort of, you know, being trapped in the snow and being in Alaska. Have any of you guys seen the film The Edge?
I haven't.
Anthony Hopkins I've and Alec Baldwin.
No, I haven't, no.
It's an incredible film. This is why I like doing the podcast, because hopefully you guys and other people out there won't have seen this film, but Anthony Hopkins, you know what I mean? One of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin, who I don't count as one of the greatest actors of all time, in this film is on the same level as Hopkins all the way through. So they have a plane crash and those two survive. And also the wife, who's played by Elle Macpherson, the model. Now, he's very... I know, it's a bit weird, that, isn't it? Yeah. I always associate her as being in Friends as well.
Yeah, Joey's girlfriend. Not good in that.
No.
But her official name is Elle Macpherson, the model.
Yes, exactly. So she isn't a major part, so don't let that put you off, please. But these two are... They are kind of foes. They get on, they do their thing, but the big survival here is being out in Alaska without any kind of Wi-Fi or phones and being trapped. You think that's pretty horrific, don't you, really?
Oh, nightmare.
But these two are very jealous of each other. They're very jealous of having the business, like, you know, the perfect girlfriend or wife. They're very kind of always against each other and very competitive.
Mm.
Not much of a great film so far. You think this sounds crap?
Does,
enter
yeah.
a big fuck-off killer bear. Ooh. And I'm talking, this is better than The Revenant.
See, now you've got me by the jaffers.
This is it. This massive bear is now after them as well. So these two have to team up and go against this bear. And the bear attacks, I don't care what anyone says, if you're listening, it does beat The Revenant. It is so well done.
Really?
No, of course it doesn't. But it does at the time. It's absolutely awesome. But the film is really, really good. And what is surprising, and you'll be quite surprised by this, is they had to stop filming for 6 months because Anthony Hopkins got pneumonia from filming out there.
Mm.
And they had to put the whole thing on hold. It nearly killed him.
Bloody hell.
That is pretty scary, isn't it, for the commitment you put to a film nowadays. Yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio, he had his little heaters when he got back to his trailer. They didn't back then for him.
Like one of these hand warmers you sort of click.
You know what I mean? Yeah, those ones that you click.
Yeah.
So these, you know, he's nearly died for this film. So if that's not enough to make you two watch it, I don't know what will be. Are you going to watch it?
No.
It's a great survival film. It's not just about the friendship. It's about survival. It's about teaming up. It's about going head to head. There's wars. There's fights. There's romance. There's death.
What, between the bear and Anthony Hopkins?
I'm not going to ruin that bit for you.
The bear, I might be interested.
And Elle McPherson. In a love triangle.
I could not bear to watch that.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Jesus.
Well, if you listen out there and you've got more patience than Ben and Gemma, please watch it because it's a great film and, you know, please, it's good. Ben, come on. Something that we all heard of.
I'm going to go with a film that is in my top five of all time, so I don't think this will be a surprise to anyone. It's Battle Royale.
It's on my list as well.
Excellent. Well done, Gemma.
Thank you.
So it's the 2000 Japanese film directed by Kinji Fukasaku, starring Takeshi Kitano and a whole bunch of Japanese kids. And it's based on a novel by Koshin Takami, and it tells a story of a future Japan where kids are essentially unruly. So the government decides that once a year they're going to send a group of school kids, they pick a high school class at random, they send them to a deserted island, give them a bunch of weapons and say, kill each other, last one standing wins. And it's supposed to be a social deterrent. It's an absolutely mental, batshit crazy idea for a film, but by God does it deliver. It's an amazing work of art, isn't it, Gemma?
Just a bit. Bloody hell. It fires from all cylinders. You genuinely don't know if you would get a backpack with a bazooka or if you would get a backpack with a pot lid.
Yeah.
But they all have their usefulnesses. It's friends turning against friends. It's alliances being formed. Even some kids who can't even bear to go through the process and end up topping themselves as well. Mm-hmm. The brutality that is seen in this film is second to none. It is just carnage. But my God, what beautiful carnage it is.
It's magnificent. I love how there's always kind of an on-screen ticker of how many remain.
Oh,
so someone will
yes.
die and then it's 28 remain. Someone else tops themselves, 27 remain. And you're just working your way down to see who's going to win, who's going to be the final, the last man standing, or last woman standing indeed.
Even the kids you think that have got a shot of actually winning it, and they don't even make it towards the first part of it. They don't even make it out of the room. Some of them.
This film.
Do you know this film was not theatrically released in the US until 2012?
Disgusting.
That's ridiculous.
So 12 years it took. But it wasn't that it was banned. It was essentially the studio in Japan, American production companies and whatnot, said to them, if you release this, you could be sent to prison for obscenity charges. So it scared the Japanese off and they didn't release it theatrically.
The fuck?
This is nonsense, isn't it? Again, it's the whole kind of... We touched on this on the last episode, I think, about censorship and how it's just insulting to adults being told you can and can't see this. No, let people make their own damn minds up. We're adults.
Yeah.
That is shit. That film should be experienced in the cinema. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't get to. I had to buy it off CD Wow.
Yeah, I got it from CD Wow. Yeah.
I remember that.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
At uni, and I got all my mates around, we piled in a room and said, let's just watch it. I'm not watching this, it's subtitles. Look, shut up, you're not bad. Watch this film, it's amazing. Everyone sat there silent for an hour and a half. It's incredible, and there's so much you see now that have taken from that film. And
cough, Hunger Games, cough.
And that's why I've not watched the Hunger Games, because it just... make me angry. Has any of you seen the sequel, Battle Royale 2?
No.
Yeah, it's dog shit.
Yeah, it's not the original cast, is it, or anything?
I think there's the main lad is the same guy, yeah. But it's,
oh, dear.
God.
Yeah, it's terrible. But as you say, with sort of unofficial remakes we've had now with The Hunger Games, it's a blatant rip-off. And the writer of The Hunger Games books has said she'd never heard of Battle Royale when she wrote her book. Bullshit. I don't buy that for one second. And it's a shame because there was talk of there being an official American remake, which... it doesn't need to be done, but there was a point when Tarantino was linked because he's said on many occasions that Battle Royale is one of his favourite films of all time. And if anyone could do it justice, it would be QT.
There's a kind of homage to this film called Series 7, The Contenders.
Great film.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
It's just like a mockumentary kind of reality show, which it's funny. It is set in a dystopian future, but there's been an announcement about a Russian game show where people are pitted to kill and maim and hurt each other and even rape each other. Read it in the news.
Okay.
Go on the website or go on the internet, have a look, Google this. It is happening this year.
Hold on. Sorry. I thought you were still talking about films. In Russia, they've actually announced that you can go and murder and rape people.
There's a game show, yeah.
So it's like The Purge. Russia's just having a purge.
They're just letting you do it.
That can't be true. I know Russia's mental, but that can't be right.
I think you've had a dream, Gemma, and that's not reality.
Really? Oh, no.
It can't be.
Putin's gone. Go on then, just do it.
I know there was an MP over there a while back who said he wanted to legalise football hooliganism. He would just say, yeah, you get a bunch of lads from each team, they have a scrap before the game, then you go and watch the game and have a pint afterwards. Hey, why not?
That sounds like what Alan Partridge would come up.
Yeah, it's the devolution of society. What an idiotic idea. I repeat, Russia is mental.
I'm going to lead on with a film now, and I'll put £50 down on the table that neither of you have seen this.
Go mm-hmm. on.
It's called Frozen, and it isn't the Disney film.
This is the one about the ski lifts, right?
That's exactly it.
I've
have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen
Money's
it.
Money's safe. Ben, have you seen this horror?
Of course
they
not.
Say it's the lost translation. They say it's lost in translation in the horror world because it's just a normal film where normal people have normal conversations.
Oh.
Listen to this for a film. I'm going to try and sell it now. So I need to get into marketing a bit more.
If you couldn't get me into a supermodel and a bear, I don't think you're going to get me into a ski lift.
Well,
round
let me tell
two,
you more.
Round two.
They're on a ski lift, and they're all these like sort of douchebags that you get on sort of American Pie. These over the top dickheads that are on this
like frat boys,
yeah,
stifflers. Absolute morons, and they all be cocky and they're like, you know, we're shutting down now, no more skiing for today, but they still go and do it anyway, and they wait up the top of the island, but all the lights go out and everything turns off while they're on this lift, and they're like, hey, we're still here. They've shut down for the whole season, so they're left on this actual chairlift and it's shut down, and they know that, hang on, well, no one's going to be coming back in the morning because this is it now for probably 6 months because the weather gets so bad. Then the whole film is set on just these three people on this ski lift. A little bit like Phone Booth, where the whole film is just around one character. You think, God, that's not going to work. It does. This film is so intense because you see the hypothermia kicking in, you see the way they're trying to survive, but you're not going to. Why? How are you going to survive? It's ridiculous. Of course you're not. But now this is when it gets good. Wolves come along. Angry, hungry wolves. And you know that these guys have got to get down eventually. Someone has got to get down to try and get help. He comes down off the lift. You think, okay, he's going to run. He is mauled to death in front of them by these wolves, eating his cheek, his face. He's being ripped apart.
That's where the majority of the meat's kept.
It's
in the
absolutely
cheek.
Yeah. Always go for the cheek.
Yeah, always.
But yeah, and they're sat there, and you just—it's horrific. And some of the practical effects again are incredible. But then you see the girl falling asleep. She wakes up the next day, and she's leant against the pole, so her whole face is frozen.
Oh, yeah.
So she pulls away, half of her cheek's coming away.
So it's a bit like Dumb and Dumber.
And it gets worse and worse, so much so that another one dies. I'm not going to ruin it too much.
Oh, good, because I'm definitely going to watch this.
It's the rewatch choice, mate. Eventually, they all die. It is horrific. It is grotesque. It is so well made that you are on the edge of your seat for an hour and a half. I don't know why, because it's only three characters. It just works. When the focus is all on these characters, and they're good actors, they're really good people, it is... It's so well made. I want you to see it.
So I'm sensing a theme with your picks here. So the first one, The Edge, blah, 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 not much happens. Then a bear turns up. Second pick, Frozen, blah, 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 not much happens. Then a wolf turns up.
Wait for number three, guys. Please, if you're listening, check this film out. If you haven't seen it, because it is a very good film. I like horrors. I would say I watch more horrors than any other genre. And this is up there in probably my top 20 horrors. It's really wow. that good.
Cool.
Amazing film. Ben, come on. Something commercial that was released in a cinema.
This is one that you will undoubtedly have both seen. It's Zombieland.
Yeah!
2009 film directed by Ruben Fleischer. It's a comedy about a gang of strangers banding together after a zombie apocalypse in an attempt to find some kind of safe haven. The film, for me, lives and dies by its chemistry. And the chemistry of the four leads is impeccable. So you've got Woody Harrelson, Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg and Abigail Breslin. And they're so great and so funny together. This was one of those early Emma Stone films where you looked at her and said, this girl is undoubtedly a star and she will go on and win Oscars one day. And lo and behold, she has. You could just see from day one, from this and from Superbad, that she was next level. But it's such a great film. And interestingly, those four leads, all four of them have been nominated for or won Oscars.
Bloody hell, they have, haven't they?
Yeah, which you don't get a lot in sort of knock-around fun zombie comedies. You don't really get actors of that calibre. But people like Woody Harrelson always do great work, no matter what kind of film you put them in.
That is one of my favourite films of all time, which mm-hmm. is a big statement. But I love the Twinkies. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Eisenberg's a funny one for me. I think he's the same guy in everything he is. Even when he's a serious in Batman and Superman, I still see him as the guy from Adventureland and
yeah.
the guy from...
The neuroses.
He is, he really is. But in this film, I don't mind it. He's fine to play that role because he needs to be the goofy kind of nerd. But I've never seen a film with such good opening credits as this film they're all the big text. And he's talking about different method of survival mm-hmm. with Metallica
the
playing.
Rules, yeah, the rules
oh, yeah.
of survival.
The rules for surviving mm-hmm. Zombieland.
Oh,
yeah.
God, it's incredible. And the way, it reminds me of like early, when it used to be good, early Walking Dead, where it was really good and gory and not just crap for two episodes and nothing happens. The way that the deaths happen, are really fucking good.
They are. Mm-hmm. And, like, and one of the features they have in the film is the zombie kill of the week.
Oh. Yes.
Like, in the one where like the piano falls
that's
on
it.
Him. And,
the old lady. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It is an amazing film.
And the greatest cameo of all time, Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah. We did that on a very, very old episode, Top Cameos, and I think a couple of us had that. Interestingly, it's no surprise that you love this especially, Mark, because Ruben Fleischer has said that his inspiration for this was Shaun of the Dead. And you can see that. You can see the same kind of DNA all over this that was in Shaun. Going back to Jesse Eisenberg, I agree. I think he is mostly the same in films. He just seems to have sort of a dick switch that he can just work up or down depending on how much of a dick he needs to be in a film. He's always the same, but more or less a dick depending on the role, what it dictates. Yeah. So, you know, your top end is Batman versus Superman and the film about Facebook. He had his dick knob up to 11.
Social Network is proper dick.
Full on dick. Whereas in Adventureland and this, his dick knob's down to about 2.
It's yeah.
Like Ben Affleck in the 90s, isn't it? He had a massive dick knob.
It's just a fantastic film all ends up. It's endlessly rewatchable as well. It's one of those that you never get tired of seeing.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
We will do it as a rewatch one day. Not now because we've talked about it, because it could have been one in the next few weeks. But come on then, Gemma.
My last choice is Sean Penn's Into the Wild.
Oh,
very good.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Starring Emile Hirsch, and it's a biopic about a chap called Christopher McCandless. And he was a top university student who decided to turn his back on civilization and the material life. And he decided to pack on out and go to the wilderness in America. So it's really a coming-of-age story, if you put it that way. It was him coming across all these different types of life and people, and it shaped him to be the person who he eventually became. And the film is split into two halves. The first half seems to be very starstruck on choosing a life without materials, sort of like an anti-American dream, really. It was kind of a wanderlust values that you see on Instagram, for example. The second half unravels like a loose thread to a jumper. It exposes his dream as a harsh and unforgiving reality, with the wilderness being this bitch of nature. And it's relentlessly powerful and a foe of man. I watched this, again, thinking, if I was Christopher McCandless, could I pack everything away? Could I say goodbye to my family? Because he doesn't even tell his family where he goes. There's no communication with post, with telephones. That the internet wasn't around sort of the early 90s anyway, so he didn't really have anything of that to worry about. But it was him starting afresh, starting anew, and becoming one with the world. And it's magnificently soundtracked to Eddie Vedder as well.
The master.
The soundtrack is gorgeous. The songs on it's absolutely beautiful, and it's a nice tribute to the life of McCandless and what he did in the world out there as well.
So this is a, you know, spoiler alert here. You've said it's a coming of age story. It's a coming of death story, isn't it?
He does not live, by the way.
Because this real life guy, Chris McCandless, had no training, no survival training whatsoever, no instincts for surviving in the wild. He just decided it would be a good idea. Mm. So we went and lived in this rickety ass bus.
The magic bus,
eating berries that were poisonous and stuff, and lo and behold, he died.
He didn't even read that book either, did he? He had it in his backpack.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I got it mixed up. Yeah, because we all do that in real life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he unfortunately died. He zipped himself up in a sleeping bag and
never woke up again.
I think he was undisturbed for a few weeks until some like poachers came and found him.
Well, then a wolf turned up. That's what would have happened if it was one of Mark's pigs.
Yeah, teamed up with a bear. Yeah. But this, I mean, for this kid to get this film made about his life, I mean, the film's beautiful. It's about 2 and a bit hours long. It's actually one of IMDb's top 250 films, which I didn't even realise. Yeah. Mm. But I think it's one of those films that slip under the radar. I really do recommend this. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. But it's the ignorance of man who believes he can be one with nature, when natural fact, nature can fuck you up.
It's kind of like Grizzly Man.
Yes.
Both in the documentary Grizzly Man now. Same kind of thing. People who think they can handle nature, and then nature says, you can't.
Yeah.
See ya.
No, they will be my friend. We can play cards. We can sit by the fire.
Wrong, motherfucker.
Language, Pookie. As Mark said, this is a family podcast.
Sorry, I was dragged up, not raised up. But what a performance from Emile Hirsch.
Yes.
Such an underrated actor. Again,
massively.
I think the last thing I saw him in, God, I can't
probably
remember.
Probably Sainsbury's stocking the shelves.
Oh, bless him. Oh,
he isn't doing much, is he?
He's not.
I haven't seen him in anything in ages.
He's phenomenal in this.
He
really
died, didn't he?
No.
In a sleeping bag. It's real, isn't it? You are telling me. Please tell me that's an actual real thing.
How do I break this? a great film.
It's my fourth choice. It would have been. Is it really? It was knocking on the door. Aww. It's so close. But Eddie, I just said it because Eddie Vedder did the soundtrack. Done next because it's one of the best. One of the ones I went and bought the soundtrack because he wrote the whole thing for the film. 12 tracks of original music, which you don't get. Normally, you get one artist doing two or three tracks, and it's a stunning album.
It's very gentle in comparison with the Ultimate Fate of McCandless as well.
Yeah, massively. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to know my last choice.
Let's is it Sharky McSharkface?
It doesn't include any killer animals at all, I'm afraid.
So it's not Sharknado 3, then?
It's The Descent, directed by Neil Marshall.
I'm familiar with it. I've never seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
So unbelievable good. Horror. Probably, and this is crazy to say, my favourite horror in the last 15 years. That's a massive statement. The last film I saw at the cinema, there was a horror where I left thinking, that actually scared me. I don't believe there's any good horrors now. You get all these ones that try and do found footage and all this shit.
So tricky to find a really decent horror film.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned for our review of Get Out coming up next.
This film was made, shot, everything done in 7 weeks, which blows my mind. Neil Marshall, I think, is one of the best British filmmakers we've got. To see Dog Soldiers as well, which I think was an absolute masterpiece.
And the episodes of Game of Thrones that he's directed have been fantastic.
Yes, big time. And if you're listening, come on the podcast because we'd like to talk to you a lot more. Mm-hmm. I think this film is genuinely scary. It got under my skin. They are a group of girls that are trying to cheer up their friend and they go on a caving expedition, just a normal caving trip. They didn't just win a red letter day or anything like that. This is a proper trip where they had all the gear. One of them knows all their stuff, knows the route and everything. As they're on this route, it's all going to plan, but they start to sort of say, this isn't what I recognise. And one of them basically said, we're kind of breaking the barrier here. This is the first time we've ever gone down this route. No one ever has. And they're like, why the hell have you done this, you fool? You're not experienced enough. The place starts falling to pieces and they're trapped. This is the ultimate survival film because they need to get out. Sounds pretty scary. How are they going to get out? The film would be a bit shit if it was just them trying to bury and tap away at some stones till they find some light.
Put a bear in there.
There are these strange, really weird breed of predators that are down there that look a bit like Gollum, but worse. The closest thing I can think of is, do you remember, it wasn't X-Files, what was the other series that was like it on BBC Two? The Outer Limits.
I remember that.
Oh my
and
there
was that really like horrible thing with the lips that was all weird and it was all bold. And these creatures are, you've seen it, haven't you, Gemma? They are terrifying. They are... And the sounds they make and the way that they move. And they're humans, obviously, in suits, but they look so scary and they're dribbling everywhere. Mm. It's absolutely horrible. And the lighting, I have never seen anything. And even these great directors like J.J. Abrams, no one does lighting like this film. It is the best example I've ever seen to use light down there. In a cave, it should be either light or dark. They do faint light. They do the big flame on a stick walking around, just glowing the room. The shadow. It is unbelievable. One of the greatest films ever made. It really is that good.
I felt so claustrophobic watching this.
Yeah.
And it makes the screams of those beings even more terrifying.
It's absolutely hot. I know you're not a massive fan of horror, Ben, but if any of these three you do take away, because I don't think you'll take the other two.
No.
One day watch The Descent, because it's just a great British decent film that isn't even really all about horror. It's just about the claustrophobic, the tense, and the,
and as well the backstabbingness of the two girls as well.
Yes, that's going on. So there's like a subplot where they're not really getting on, and one of the girls gets killed, but it's one of the other girls that actually kills her and tries to cover it up, saying
but
it was
why?
One of these
why?
Golems. Yeah, it's, I won't tell you that bit, but amazing movie, dude.
I wouldn't mind checking it out because I do like Neil Marshall's work, so I might give it a go. It's on a long list towards the bottom, but I will watch it one day.
A list of 5,000. Cool, and then what's missed out? What's the social media come along with?
Well, I'm glad you asked. On Twitter, we had Film Roast at Film Roast Show, say The Revenant, Castaway, and The Road.
Yeah.
And they put a little bonus one with Homeward Bound.
Is that about a dog?
Mm-hmm.
Shame.
Homeward Bound, that is literally four dogs, isn't it? They walk along for weeks.
It's a dog. No, two dogs and a cat.
Shite.
That wouldn't happen.
No.
I question the truthfulness of that.
Wow. Marcus at The Marco Guy said Into the Wild, The Road and 127 Hours.
Yes, James Franco. Yeah. He did all right in that.
It's arguably really his best performance until, apparently, The Disaster Artist.
Which is Oscar worthy.
Yeah. Phil Bradbury at Mr. Film Fan, 127 Hours, I Am Legend and Sanctum.
I don't know what that is.
Sanctum is, I don't know. It's got the guy.
Cheers,
it's
Mark,
got the
thanks.
Guy from Avatar.
Brilliant.
The bad guy, but it's supposed to be pretty shit. And I Am Legend, I'm not even going to go there.
Terrible.
Laura Galarducci at Lolu Photography says Into the Wild, The Revenant and Battle Royale.
Excellent choices.
That's awesome. Mm.
Also with kudos to Apocalypto as well. Yeah.
Brilliant film.
I've seen that.
Super. Yeah, Mel Gibson.
Oh, it's badass, isn't it?
Very, very good film.
Game of Chris at Innsmouth X Shade said The Grey, Castaway and The Shallows.
The Grey was a far better film than I thought it would be. That was another one where wolves show up.
Yeah. It?
It's basically a remake of My Choice. So I'm telling you now, get on it instead. Watch Frozen.
Bud Spears Brutality at 3B Horror Pod says Lord of the Flies.
Well, no, Lord of the Flies is fantastic.
The book is.
There are two Lord of the Flies films. The original version of it is in black and white, and that's significantly better than the latter one that starred Balthazar Getty and was dog shit.
Yeah,
watch the black and white one.
I was on more about the annoying kids in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But you also agreed with Children of Men.
Yep.
And Castaway. Yeah. Good Times, Great Movies at GTGMcast. The Grey or The Edge or The Revenant?
Yep.
Edge, yeah.
There we go. And then last, Large Marge sent us at the Sweetie Club. Cube, Alien, Battle Royale.
Alien. Amazing. So many good ones. Who's it next then?
It's my turn next. We're going to do a bit of time travelling. I want your top three 1960s movies.
Oh.
Thank you.
Get out. Get out. I mean it.
See Get Out, the directorial debut of American comedian Jordan Peele. The film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Alison Williams, Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford, to name but a few. There is going to be a disclaimer. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of Get Out. So there are going to be a lot of spoilers. So if you don't want to listen to the review because you want to watch the film, we do have times posted on our website. Go check them out. Come back to this once you've seen the film and see if you agree with us or not. So the film chronicles a young African-American man called Chris who visits his Caucasian girlfriend Rose's family for the weekend. Through awkward interactions and strange encounters, Chris learns that just because you've been invited doesn't mean you're welcome.
Ooh, nicely put.
Thank you very much. So it's going to be an interesting one because I like horror, Mark likes horror, but Ben does not like horror. So It's going to be a bit of a... It's going to be an interesting one, I think. So I'm going to throw this to Mark first. So I want to hear your initial reactions to Get Out.
This was tension like no other. It was basically meet the parents meets Stepford Wives.
Mm.
It is no way the 100% 10 out of 10 that it's getting. It is not a game changer in the horror world for me. It's a good film, but my God, people, get off that bus because it isn't as good as what people are saying. They're going crazy. People at 100% drop down to 99% because of one jerk off. It's not. It's a 70-80. This is ridiculous, the reviews it's getting.
Don't give away your final score,
but, you know, this is getting crazy. I didn't realise how many people are saying this is the best horror in 20 years. Mm. You'll see nothing like it. I think I went to the wrong film.
Okay. Ben.
Yeah, I'm with you, to be honest. I was very disappointed. It's being billed as a horror comedy. I didn't find it horrific in any way, nor was it particularly funny. It was a kind of run-of-the-mill suspense thriller for me. Didn't really work for me at all. Not a fan.
I disagree with you both. I absolutely loved it. It's refreshing to finally see a horror film that has so much originality. There is clear inspiration from things like The Stepford Wives and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but this film left me unsettled, gobsmacked, fearful, elated... And I was buzzing by the time I finished watching this. If this is the start of Jordan Peele's directorial and writing career, I want more.
Where do we go from here?
I love Jordan Peele. I think he's one of the funniest sketch comedian and sketch comedy writers in the business. Key and Peele is a masterpiece of a show. If you've not seen Key and Peele, go onto YouTube. There are plenty of clips on there. They're hilarious. So for him to step out of his comfort zone and do something that is less, you know, obviously comedic than this... Good on him. And he's done a great job. And the film looks fantastic. I can't fault the direction. I think it's masterfully done. It doesn't look like a guy directing his first film at all. So more power to him. The comedy side of it, though, I felt a bit let down by. There was one comedic character. There was a comic relief character who is Chris's best friend. What was his name? Ron or
Rod.
Ray or something.
Rod. Williams.
He was funny. He had a few interesting lines. I laughed at him. But outside of that, it wasn't a comedy to me. It was satirical. There was the whole satire of, you know, this black kid going to a white family, and it was a you know, a play on race relations, especially in how they are in America right now. So the satire of it was there, but it wasn't, to call it a comedy, I think, is a stretch.
Yeah. The racial element is what people are going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was effective. I thought it was really well done that when you first meet the other characters in the house, it was like a sort of a slave, wasn't it? Walking around doing all the odd jobs and really, like, really...
Like a groundskeeper.
Yeah.
A groundskeeper.
Everything that you had to get your hands dirty was a black person. And it was just a bit like, okay, I started to see what's happening here. But the family always came off that they were really welcoming of the black boyfriend. And it seemed like, okay, there's something not quite right. It's a bit quirky, this. It didn't seem right to me. And I can see that people are discussing this because it's quite brave, isn't it, having the white people terrorize the black person in the film. And normally it's the other way around. I don't want to get too political here and start talking about race stuff, but I think that's quite brave.
The interesting thing to me is that the white guys are portrayed as the bad guys, because they are in this film, but it's not the kind of bad white people you'd expect to see in this environment. You would expect them to be right-wing Trump-voting hicks, but the white people in this film aren't. They're all left-leaning, liberal, bleeding hearts who think they love black people, but it's that kind of... the subtle racism that goes along with those kind of expectations of, you know, calling people my man and putting out your fist for a fist bump and that. You know, I'm down with the kids, I'm down with black people. It's, well, you're not. Mm-hmm. You're leaning into stereotypes. You're just as bad as hicks.
Yeah, I would vote for Obama three times if I could.
Exactly, yeah. So it was interesting that he went down that route, Peele. I like that. That did
it's
work.
It's brave,
for me,
isn't it? Mm-hmm. But I felt it was fair play. It made it quite uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Hugely.
Yeah.
But for the MVP of the film was Daniel Kaluuya. As Chris, I thought he was absolutely magnificent. We've seen him before in Skins. We've seen him in Black Mirror. Recently, Sicario as well.
I actually refer to him as Tea Leaf because of Psychoville, so I can never not see him as Tea Leaf.
Of course he's in Psychoville.
Yes. So even when I was watching this, I was like, there's Tea Leaf.
I've forgotten he was in Sicario as well.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's a tour de force in this film. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic. He carried the film absolutely beautifully. He had very human reactions and interactions with everybody that I really enjoyed. And the chemistry with him and Alison Williams, who plays his girlfriend Rose, was there. It was a real strong connection. But of course, not everything was rosy.
Oh, I like that.
Because she is one of them. She was part of the whole coagula.
Yeah. So the thing that Gemma's leaning into there is, for me, the reason why the film didn't work is for the first hour I was just deathly bored. After about an hour, for the final 40 minutes of the film, it kind of kicked up a notch and I started to enjoy it, because we find out that these, spoiler alert, that these white people... The main guy, played by Bradley Whitford, he is a neurosurgeon, and what he can do is put the consciousness of old white people into young black bodies. So these black people that we've seen that we think are slaves were actually the grandparents or something, weren't they? So we then find out that Alison Williams' character, Chris's girlfriend, who's been supportive and lovely to him all this time, was in on it. She's basically brought him to this house for the express purpose of being able to put a white dude's consciousness in his brain. That's when the film kicked in for me. Mm-hmm. When it was a reveal that she was in on it and her smile just dropped and her face went stony serious, that's when I was like, okay, you've got me now. Now I'm interested. In the last 40 minutes I did enjoy. It just took a long while to get to that point.
Yeah, that moment on the stairs. Give me the keys. Give me the keys. Mm-hmm. Come on, give me the keys. And you just see her turn heel instantly. It's like...
You know, I can't give this to you.
Did you see that coming? Because I didn't, and I hadn't read anything about it. We all went in, you know, and I was thinking, this is good, because I've not read anything about it. We went the day it came out, which was good, so no one spoiled it for us.
Unfortunately I did see a bit of it coming. It was during the silent auction that they had, where they covered it up as a bingo game. And they're both having a chat by the lake. He just wants to go, he doesn't feel comfortable. She decides, you know what, you're right, okay, let's go back. They have a kind of a hug, and there was something about the way how she smiled into the distance that told me, nah, this isn't going to end up happily. She is in on it.
See, I didn't think she was, and it was more of a practical thing. I couldn't see Jordan Peele writing a film where every single white person turned out to be evil. I thought there would be one good white person in it, because I thought, you know, just out of commercial things, if you're going to expect a white audience to go to this, you'd at least want one good whitey in it. No.
They're all bastards.
All of them evil. Brilliant.
That's what I'm saying. It's a brave effort. And
debut. It is brave, yeah.
And I'm going to have to take my hat off to him for that. Not that I wear a hat, but if I did, I would. And, you know, what I like about this film, and it's again, refreshing, is there's no monsters. There's no stupid over-the-top, suddenly there's no wolves. But there isn't, is there? There's none of these monsters. They don't go down into the cellar and then suddenly there's a monster down there, like the Babadook or anything like that. This is really good that it's the human element and the racism that's more powerful than any monster right now. It's good.
Mm-hmm. I tell you who the monsters are.
The Whiteys.
The people that stir a cup of tea for longer than 10 seconds.
See, that bit was really good. So the mother is a hypnotist and she's sitting there talking to him because he's gone out for a fag. He's trying to cut down smoking and she's sat there and you see this spoon going around. It annoys me because I don't like that sound anyway. People will do it when I'm at work and I'm like, can you just stir it for like 3 or 4 times and take the tea bag out? And they're going and going and going. This is 3 minutes while she's talking, and that was annoying me just because I don't like the sound. But what a way to hypnotize someone without them even realizing.
There was something really disturbing and freaky about that. Just something completely out of the ordinary, and it's twisted on its head.
Yeah, Catherine Keener was great as the mum, as the hypnotherapist. She just seemed suitably creepy. And one of the things I like, one of the directorial choices I liked, is when she hypnotized people and they went into, what do they call it? The sunken place.
Yes.
And you see them kind of floating in the void, and then they look upwards and they can see the people who are around them getting further and further away as like a little pinpoint at the end. I thought that was a really nice quirk. I think that looked great.
It looked
great.
Beautiful. Yeah. It looked really, really good.
It reminded me of Snatch when he first gets knocked down and he goes into the water and you see him coming down. But this was... When you said, Ben, then that they're looking down at him, I don't think I've seen that before in cinema. I don't think I've seen that sort of shot. Mm-hmm. You see the first part when it goes dragging towards the ground. Fair play, man. Yeah. I'm excited for what he's going to do next.
Me too.
And it's breaking records, isn't it? It's breaking records in the way that it only cost about $10 million to make and he's already hit $100 million. It's number one in America. Mm-hmm. I'm sure all of them will go on and have more work from this, especially Tea Leaf. He's going to be bloody all over the shop now. Yeah.
And Alison Williams as well. I believe this was her first film role. She's been in Girls, that god-awful TV series, for the last few years. But she's a great screen presence. I mean, she's a beautiful girl as well. She's bound to get work, and I hope so. One of my favourite things in the film, right at the end of the film, when Chris is trying to kill Rose and he's strangling her, and then he realises that because this is a woman he was in love with, he can't bring himself to kill her. And then just a smile comes on her face when she realises that he can't do it. Brilliant piece of acting. Really subtle, really well done.
That shows just how evil that family was. They were horrible. Just horrible, horrible, horrible.
The dad is especially the one that creeped me out.
He's more faces than Lemony Snicket.
Massively. That's a massive say in that one. Mm-hmm. But it's he just had that... it reminded me a little bit of Red State, Michael Parks, his character. It really did make me feel uncomfortable. And he had that presence of whatever I say goes. You know that if he suddenly said to his daughter to do anything, they would do it. And the brother, who we haven't talked about, who's an absolute lunatic.
Drunk. Yeah, Caleb Landry Jones played him. I thought he was really good. He had a really quirky energy about him.
There was something about it, this is going to sound really weird, but it reminded me of a straight-laced character from, I don't know, Deliverance. Like that real sort of middle-class, very calm and, well, not calm and collected, but just that calmness about you don't know what he's going to do next. Like real volatile and unpredictableness.
He reminded me of one of the guys from Funny Games.
Oh my God, really on edge. But the fact that he greeted everyone like, all right, fam, and like whoever uses the word fam like needs a saucepan to the face.
That's right, Nostalgia. I was going to say, right, listen to questions now, fam.
No. So I think we're ready to wrap this up. Mm-hmm. So, Ben, I'd like you to go first. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't like the film, as I said. It wasn't really my cup of tea. I can see what Jordan Peele was trying to do. And I applaud that, and I think there were some brave choices, and I think his directorial choices were great. I think he's got a great future ahead of him. This just wasn't it for me, so it's a 6.
Okay, Mark?
I'm going to go one better, just because I think, hats off to him. I think the acting was good, 7. But that's still not a bad rating.
That's not a bad rating, and I absolutely love this. I'm not going to try and shy away from it. For me, it is a very strong 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Holy moly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a 7 overall.
Yeah.
So Get Out gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10.
It's competition time! Is that all right?
Yep.
Like that?
Mm-hmm.
Acceptable? Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
let's do it.
I'm not going to do it every time because my throat does start to get sore, but luckily I've got some Brothers Festival apple still English cider.
Oh, me too.
I'll join you in.
It's going down a charm.
Thank you, Brothers, for this, because it's a bit refreshing and nice to not have this gassy cider for a change. So it's
big fan. Yeah, big fan of the still cider.
So we're definitely the winners on this competition.
Yeah. But also I like their normal gassy cider as well, so it's win-win for me.
Anything. Whatever you want to give us is good.
As long as it's got Brothers on it, we're happy.
Definitely. Anyway, we've won that today, so we're all here winning the taste of Brothers, but we want to make sure that you guys are looked after as well. You know, we are here to make sure that you are all catered for. So if you listened to our last episode, we gave away an Aliens t-shirt from our good friends at Dark Bunny. The simple question was, really, really simple, who directed Aliens? Gemma?
James Cameron.
Exactly, and Colin Edwards on Facebook will be getting that. Have you seen the t-shirt, the grey one with
it's
the
gut? Gorgeous.
Smart as hell. See, I'm not swearing as much now.
And hell is very smart.
The main review on the last episode was Logan, and to tie in nicely, we had a bundle which consisted of a jumper, a hip flask, a shot glass, a set of dog tags, pretty much everything you could name. Basically, who plays Wolverine? Ben?
Hugh Jackman.
Perfect. Alan Scott is getting that on Facebook, so you'll be getting all that. I want to see photos. When you receive it in the post, take some photos with your dog tags and your jumper and a hip flask of brothers. Yeah.
And do your hair up like Wolverine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Grow a beard, mutton chops, please.
Massively. And also, we gave away the first ever Skip to the End t-shirt. And all you had to do was leave a review for us, hopefully a five-star review. Now, 108 people are in this pot right now to win this.
Wow.
So here we go. Do you have a drum roll?
Yeah.
The winner is Nami337, who gave us a five-star glowing review. Only last month, so you know, There you go. You'll be getting the first ever Skip to the End Dark Bunny t-shirt. Shall I give some more stuff away?
Yeah.
You know our good friends that sent us to... They didn't send us to the actual island of Kong Skull Island. That would be pretty scary. They sent us to the premiere, Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
They've given us a massive bundle for Kong Skull Island. In this, you get a backpack, a t-shirt, a hat, some USB dog tags, a tank top, a journal, and a flight jacket. Which is pretty cool, actually. A massive bundle. What character does Brie Larson play in the movie? That's nice and simple. Also, do you remember on the last episode, our good friend Howie at Richer Sounds in Preston?
Yep.
Hey, Howie.
People have been getting on. I've seen tweets to him and stuff now this week, so it's really good. He's given us two pairs of Soundmagic ES18 headphones, which would be perfect to listen to our podcast on. Really nice, decent, high quality. So we're high quality anyway, but even make it better with crystal clear sound. You know what I mean?
Win-win.
All you got to do is... let's make it interesting. On the last episode, we reviewed Life of Brian. What rating did we give it? This is a proper one for the hardcore fans. So, you know, if you haven't listened to the last episode, go back, have a quick listen. The times are there, and let us know what we scored Life of Brian. Did you see this week that Dark Bunny have done a brand new Logan t-shirt?
Yes.
For the limousine company.
Logan's Limos.
Let's make it even more interesting. What rating did we give Logan on the last episode? That's really good. And the one winner is going to get that brand new t-shirt. And unfortunately, as you're listening to this, we've sold out now of all the Skip the End t-shirts. All of them have gone. We did a million. Can you believe that? 1 million, and they've all gone. So what I've done is I've asked Doc Bunny to send the 1 millionth to us. So we've got it here now. The last ever Skip the End t-shirt. All you need to do is leave us an iTunes rating, and that is it. We will pick one winner, and it's not one of these things where we then get another one. This is the very last one they print, and we'll give that away in 2 weeks' time.
Movie masturbate time. I can't do the same thing as competition time.
I'll sue you. It's my little trademark. It's what people quote and stuff. I don't want you suddenly now getting the limelight.
Well, I can't do that kind of noise, right? So
you should be thankful that you can't, because it's vile.
That's true, actually. So it's movie masturbate time.
Perfect.
There we go. On the last episode, we picked the name from the pot and we got Sigourney Weaver. But for those of you who can't remember what this whole segment is about, fret no more. We pick a name out of the pot, and we discuss our favourite film from said actor or actress. So, as mentioned a moment ago, we had Sigourney Weaver for this episode. So, who is going to go first? It's going to be Ben. Tell me your one.
Aliens. See you later.
Mine too. There we go.
And I'm specifically saying aliens with the S on the end,
yeah? I've got a plural here.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, same?
Yes. Yeah. It's...
Ellen Ripley.
Go, just talk.
Yeah. Ellen Ripley, Aliens, 1986. Now, obviously, Ellen Ripley first appeared in Alien in, I think, 79. And the interesting thing about that character is in the mid to late 70s, early 80s, you didn't get these kick-ass heroines. It just didn't happen. Women in films at that time were generally wives and girlfriends or damsels in distress. You didn't get these badass bitches. And the great thing about Ellen Ripley is She wasn't one of the kind of modern day heroines that we get now who wear skimpy costumes and do kung fu kicks and all this kind of shit. She was just a fucking badass warrior with a gun taking down these aliens. She, you know, it's a role that could have been played by a man or a woman, effectively. It wasn't tarted up to be a female character, but she just delivered it with such aplomb. A magnificent performance. And she's had many, many great performances over her career, but Aliens especially, when she was even more badass than Alien. Can't beat it.
We launched this podcast 2.5 years ago and we did our top 5 films of all time. Aliens was in there. We did it again after a year. We recapped Alien stayed, and we did it again about a few months ago in Alien stayed. It's the first time that one of them's really stuck because I've took stuff Back to the Future out and stuff. Mm-hmm. Aliens is the greatest horror film of all time. It's the greatest sci-fi film of all time, and it's the greatest in the top 5 greatest films ever made. And I think it is actually down to her performance.
Yeah.
Yes. James Cameron is an amazing director. Yes, Bill Paxton in this film steals it. He mm-hmm. is unbelievable. You forget, and it sometimes takes the death of someone to go back and watch some of their work. But I will watch Aliens again and again, and I never get bored. But it's the mother icon of Newt that makes this film better for me than Alien. This is more of a war. This is more of a protection of a figure that will do everything she can to protect this person against the ultimate beast. And I'm not talking about a bear this time. I'm not talking about a crocodile. This film is everything I could ever wish for. I think it is a perfect film, which we don't get. There's always something you can pull apart. Oh, this isn't quite good. I do believe this is a perfect movie. Ben just said there it could have been a woman. It could have been a guy. No other actress or actor could do the role of Ripley as well as her. She was born to be Ripley. And sometimes you think that's a bit unfair. She's done other stuff. There's some good films out there. I do believe that she was born to be this part. And no one else could ever get close to this performance. No one ever will. Aliens 3 is a bit wank. Alien Resurrections is wank. But what she did on film for those two films, Alien Aliens, will never ever be replicated. And they are the greatest performance from a single female actor of all time. Done.
It's funny that a lot of female icons at the moment are people like a Kardashian or someone from The Only Way Is Essex.
Oh God, I feel angry that you just said those words.
These women who have big bouffant hair, big thick eyebrows that you can probably see from outer space. These are female icons that little girls should look up to. Bullshit. Every single little girl should watch Aliens and feel fucking empowered.
Yes.
Ripley is a feminist icon that I am very proud to follow, who I'm very proud to be inspired by. And Sigourney Weaver is Ripley. She is the lady that we should all be looking to. We all should be praising. Fuck Kardashians.
Prove it. Shave your head for next episode.
All right, let's do it. I'll go 11
well, star. Wow, you heard that?
Let's take it back.
No. That constitutes a verbal contract, and we should be enforcing it rigidly.
I can't wait to put those pictures on Instagram.
No, I don't.
Prove how much of a feminist character she is. Come on.
What?
Shave your head.
She's only just grew it back after the illness.
That wig is unreal. So I think it's fair to say we all love Aliens.
We
absolutely
do. And the interesting thing is that Sigourney was nominated for an Oscar for this film, which is almost unheard of for the Academy to notice people who are in action films, and even less likely to notice people who are in sci-fi films. The Academy fucking hates sci-fi. They won't have anything to do with it. So for her to get a Best Actress nom is huge. Huge. That shows you how big this performance was.
It also shows you how shit the world is now that we'll never get that again. Yeah. You're never going to get Alien Convent, or whatever it's called, going to be in the Oscar running in a couple of years.
Alien Convent? Is that where there are a load of nuns fighting aliens?
The alien queen in a habit.
I could just see them all now with little bald heads. Yep, he's back again, the guy from Police Academy. Michael Winslow's on the episode right now.
It's upsetting to me that Neil Blomkamp's Alien sequel looks like it's dead in the water. Initially, the plan was that Ridley Scott was going to do his follow-up to Prometheus, and then Neil Blomkamp was going to be allowed to play in the alien world. But because Ridley Scott has decided to expand his sandpit, as it were, it's kind of pushed Blomkamp out, which is a shame, because Blomkamp's plan was to effectively pretend that Alien 3 and Resurrection didn't exist. His film was going to be a direct follow-on to Aliens and bring back Ripley, bring back Sigourney Weaver.
Wow.
And apparently there's a script out there. Sigourney was interested. Everyone says the script is great. But because Ridley Scott went, no, this is my playground, not yours, pal, jog on. It looks like it's done.
Damn shame. Can't they just be friends?
But we have had the announcement, haven't we, that he's doing another couple of Alien films. He's already secured the sequel to the next one.
Yeah,
so.
But they're all still prequels prior to Alien, so they're not going to include Weaver.
They'll CGI her as well in about 10 years, which will be depressing.
And the thing is, you know, age gets us all, there will come a point where she can't really be Ripley anymore, because I would imagine she's about 60 now.
She could, but you know that big sort of mechanism that she pops herself on at the end of Aliens? Mm-hmm. She could just get one of those. That could be like a walker.
It reminds me...
like a Zimmer frame, but really high-tech.
She'd be like Kerrang off Turtles, just like preserved inside it, just the robot.
You could call it Alien Pension.
Nice. There you go. The script writes itself, practically, doesn't it?
There we go. So, if any investors are listening, hello.
Yes, so do you want to hear what the social media came up with?
I do.
There's some good ones. James, which is at JLo3133. Paul, he says it's very underrated and loved it.
It's okay, that film. She is good in it, though.
Yeah, I think it's a good film.
It's all right.
A very popular one that came through a lot on social media from at TamslinAnne1, Heartbreakers.
I've never seen it.
It's harmless. It's actually quite all right.
Brilliant. We've got Podcast With No Aim, which is at Podcast No Aim. Wants to be a bit different because they've seen everyone's own Ripley, Ghostbusters.
Of course, yeah. Very good.
I really fancy her in that as well. Really do. Colin P, really, really, really popular one on social media, Galaxy Quest.
Oh, what a great film that is. Galaxy Quest is so funny and popular that there have been polls of the best Star Trek films, and that will appear in polls as the best Star Trek. Even though it's kind of a riff on Star Trek, Trekkies love it so much.
Yeah.
Great film, she's great in it, but it's Alan Rickman who steals the show in that
film.
All the good ones die.
They do. Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, which is at spoilers_pod, wants to be a bit different, A Monster Calls. Oh.
She's great in it, but she has a very strange accent.
And very recent as well.
Very,
so
very
play.
Recent.
Lorna DeMarco, which is at Foxy Snob, loved her as the boss in Working Girl.
Yes, she is fierce in that.
And fierce.
She is.
And very finally, we've got Kieran, which is at KiermacA85, Copycat, which I've not seen, but I saw a lot of people tweeting it. Have you seen it?
No.
Have you seen it?
I don't think so.
So that's one we'll have to check out, because it did come through a lot on social media.
Cool.
I've got the urge, I've got a boner, and I want to get rid of it. So who are we mass debating over on the next episode?
Shall we find out?
Let's have a drum roll.
Come on.
Hopefully someone that we don't all agree on.
Ooh. So on the next episode, we will be mass debating over Ben Stiller.
Boom! Ooh,
very different.
The rewatch this time round is L.A. Confidential, 1997 film directed by Curtis Hanson and written by Hanson and Brian Helgeland. It's a marvellous film that's about a group of cops in 1950s L.A. It's about the straight-laced Edmund Exley, played by Guy Pearce, the loose cannon Bud White, played by Russell Crowe, and the sleazy Jack Vincennes, played by Kevin Spacey. The story involved the cops navigating corruption in the force whilst also investigating a series of grisly murders.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. I just want to score it right now and just then go home and be done with it, because it's just such a beautiful, wonderful, wonderful film. But I want to throw it out to Gemma first. I want your thoughts.
I miss these kind of films. The cinematic glow it has when you watch it on the screen, down to that perfect, perfect 1950s style of score with the lone trumpet. The acting is impeccable from an ensemble. The whole cast is gold. And my God, what a film. it is perfection. This film is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. You're both a fan then, yeah?
Yeah, just a bit.
Just
a
tiny bit.
My thoughts are that to know that Titanic won the Oscar for Best Picture over this,
scum.
And those three actors weren't even nominated for the Best Lead Role,
Subhuman scum,
is probably the biggest travesty in Oscar history. I honestly believe that now that I've seen it again.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen this film for 10 years. I hadn't. And I can safely say, spoiler alert, that come the new year, this will be going into my top five films of all time.
Do you know, I was thinking the same thing. Oh, after I watched it again this weekend, I was thinking this could easily break my top five. I just don't know what it would replace.
Yeah.
But it is that damn good, isn't it?
It's
classic.
It really is. It is a masterpiece.
Classic.
Yeah.
And I said earlier, there's not many films that are perfect. I can't fault anything. And I remember when we talked about The Usual Suspects and I was jizzing all over Kevin Spacey, didn't I? Mm-hmm. I was saying it's his greatest performance of all time. I was on drugs, I think, that episode, because it's not. This is his greatest film of all time.
When we pull Kevin Spacey out of the movie masturbate part, that's going to be a tough old conversation, because we've seen some really great work from him, and this is right up there. I would probably agree with you. As it stands now, I'd say this was his best work. He's so cool. He's just so chilled as Jack Vincennes, you know. He's the guy who... He's a cop who works in the... he's one of the drug cops, isn't he?
That's right.
But he also then is an advisor on a TV show, and they all love him on set. He's just sort of walking in with his white suit, looking cool as hell. He's so suave. Love him as Jack Vincennes.
Oozes machismo and charisma from every pore.
And what a lot of people don't give credit for is Russell Crowe, because I kind of don't know if I love Russell Crowe or I just like him. Like, I honestly can't decide. Some of his films I don't care for, and he does a lot of rubbish, but this is his greatest performance ever on screen. The moment the film starts and it's him, to the moment, which is the final scene with him in, he is by far his greatest performance on screen by him. If we pulled him out, it instantly would be this. Yeah. It would just be like, well, let's pick again, because there's no point talking about it. Unbelievable.
It's so funny. He's a bully, but he's a righteous bully. It's almost like he's trying to be, you know, when someone's trying to sort of describe why they're doing something. So rather than if they're doing something wrong, but they've got the goods to back it up. So he almost avenges these poor battered women who get knocked around by their other halves, and he's sort of like their avenger. But then ultimately he becomes everything he hates. And
he's so believable in this role, where most people you switch off and go, well, actually, I've seen him in Gladiator, I've seen him in this. Mm-hmm. But he's so believable and so incredible that I actually sympathise for him at times, and I actually warm to him, which is, he's a corrupt fucker in this film. I shouldn't be really...
He's volatile.
I shouldn't be on his side, but he's that believable. He has the audience there in his hands, and I'm actually rooting for him.
I'll tell you what sums up the performance from Russell Crowe in this film for me. So in the first maybe half an hour of the film, you just see him as this mindless thug. He's a thuggish cop. He's a guy who's just there to be muscle, and he's well aware of the corruption that goes on around him. He doesn't stand up against it. You know, he's just part of the system. He has this meeting with the chief in a restaurant or in a bar, and the chief says to him, oh yeah, we're glad that you didn't basically snitch on these people who did this bad thing. We're glad you didn't snitch, so we're going to move you over to the detective bureau. And he's like, what? I'm going to be investigating cases? No, that's not what we want from you. You're still going to be muscle. And you kind of see that heartbreak in his eyes. You think he's finally broken through and he's going to get to be more than he is. And then the chief's like, no, you're still just going to be the guy beating up people because I've said that you need to. And it's heartbreaking. You really see that it's more than meets the eye. He's not just surface. There's a lot going on underneath the surface with that character.
The key to him as well is, of course, Lynn Bracken, who's beautifully played by Kim Basinger.
Mm-hmm.
She is a vision. She floats onto the screen, and she's this almost like this beautiful, ethereal Disney princess who also has to be a bit of a prosy. You know, like, ho white.
Prosy? I've not heard that for ages.
I think you're glossing over Gemma's ho white
play. Yes.
which needed a da-dum-dum.
But you just see her in like this sort of Sleeping Beauty-esque cloak that hides her face. And then she has these ruby red lips, the softest white skin, and this beautiful sort of Hollywood wave of blonde hair. And besides her look, because she is bloody gorgeous in this, I was drawn to every single scene that she was in. She had this softness, this vulnerability, and rightly so, she won Best Supporting Actress at the Oscars as well. She is out of this world.
She's great in this. Her performance is so soulful. Mm-hmm. It could have been a performance that was all surface because of how she looks. You could have just employed an attractive actress, and they did. Kim Basinger is beautiful, but she brings so much soul and depth to this character. It's no wonder she won the Oscar. She was flawless.
This film is just perfect. I don't want to sound like I'm gushing too much, but it's some of the best writing I've ever seen. It's by far the best editing. It's seamless. I've not seen anything as edited as well as this, but also 1950s LA. Has it ever looked so crystal clear, so beautiful, and so perfect?
Mm-hmm. Well, to that, because I've got a good fun fact for you about this.
Ben will have known it.
So Curtis Hanson told the cinematographer Dante Spinotti, who's worked on Heat, he told him to shoot the film like a modern film and use a more natural light rather than what's seen in a classic film noir. And he also told Spinotti and the production designer Jennifer Opperwall to pay attention to the period detail of the 50s, but then to put it all in the background.
Nice.
So it merges into like this naturalistic view that you actually watch it whilst you've seen the film.
And I think also one of the things Hanson wanted to do was show the kind of the breakdown of the American dream. It wasn't just this the glamour of the 50s, which would have been easy to present this artificial facade of glamour. He wanted to show the seedy underbelly of LA as much as anything.
And you know what that was? Two little words. Hush, hush.
Hush, hush, indeed. Guy Pearce as well is fantastic. The interesting thing about this film is that when it came out, Guy Pearce and Russell Crowe were both effectively unknown in the States. Guy Pearce had been in Neighbours, and Russell Crowe, I think he'd been in Romper Stomper, which is maybe That's a Kiwi right. or Australian film, but they'd done very little. And Curtis Hanson had to fight to cast these guys. And I think the studio only really gave in because it was a low-budget film anyway, and that's all he could afford. But they're so good. Guy Pearce is magnificent because he plays this guy who's morally upright to the point where he's incredibly smug. He's a bit self-righteous, and he just has one of those faces. He has a really angular face, like really prominent cheekbones and prominent lips and stuff, and he just looks like a smug wanker.
Yeah,
and I love how over the course of the film he maintains that smugness all the way through because he's just got one of those punchable faces.
Yes,
but he learns to work outside of the lines. He was the guy who was do everything right, but then when he eventually teams up with Bud, with Russell Crowe's character, and he lets Bud throw that guy out of the window and stuff, and you're like, oh, here we go. Now we're seeing the real deal. He knows what it's all about now.
Oh, Guy Pearce, man, again, not nominated. It makes me angry. Mm-hmm.
I still think he's quite underrated. He does these fantastic performances that we've seen in the past, like Memento, for example.
Yeah.
But he needs to be in films more. He needs to have that recognition, certainly amongst accolades, at least. But he's I couldn't stop watching him in this film.
I think the moment in the film where he does team up with Bud, because Bud is furious at him because of all the corruption that's going on, the chief has essentially set up Ed so that Bud goes and kills him. Bud goes, finds Ed, beats the living piss out of him, but then Ed manages to persuade him on the fact that the chief is setting them all up and that the place is corrupt and they need to work together. When those two finally team together after being pretty much mortal enemies, it's one of those punch the air moments. Yes. Like, yes, here we go. It's now like, it's getting good.
Shit's about to go down.
And there's scenes of them, you know, going into houses and kicking the door down like, this is it. This is fucking it. I love that so much.
Corruption at its best. Mm.
You mentioned about kicking a door down. I know this is going to be a tiny little thing to highlight, but I fell in love with the sound effects and the sound editing. So crisp.
Yes.
So clear. From the gunshots to the cocking of the pistols to people being thrown across a balcony and being hung outside. I fell in love with that.
You're right. I noticed that especially in the big shootout in the kind of shack at the end of the film. The gunfire, the sounds of there are so crisp. Beautiful.
Like, you're actually within that house in that siege. I didn't think I would get so excited about sound editing until now.
For the film in the 90s, the sound better than any film now.
And massively.
One of the other scenes that really gets me in that film is Jack Vincenzi's death scene.
Oh my
so
God.
He goes to question the chief, played brilliantly by James Cromwell. And then Cromwell is there in his dressing gown, he's making him a cup of coffee, and then just turns around, he's got a gun in his hand, doesn't even say anything, boom, just shoots him through the heart. And Jack just dies because he's not even uncovered anything. He's not even realised that the chief is involved in the corruption, but he's got too close, so the chief just puts him out of commission. Brilliantly played by Spacey and Cromwell. Fantastic.
That sucks when he dies.
Cromwell needs a lot more credit, actually, because we're talking about the three main leads here, but he's up there with the other three.
Yeah. He is, yeah. I actually saw him in this film before I saw Babe. And then when I saw him in Babe as the lovely, kind farmer, I was like, watch out, Big. Big. If I know anything about James Cromwell, you're going to be bacon in a minute.
When he says, that'll do, Pig, I'm telling you, there's a swerve coming. That's where I've seen him before. I was watching it yesterday thinking, where have I seen him before?
Yeah.
Bloody Babe.
He was in recently the second season of American Horror Story. He was like this crazy doctor, but he's great in that as well. Again, underrated. I also love Danny DeVito in this.
Yeah.
That short little fella.
Yeah.
But he's great. He's like, I refer to him as the ringmaster of sleaze. He's the guy who's kind of creating all of these scandals within Hollywood and polishing off this perfect golden veneer that we see of this tinsel town. But he's great in this. He's just the way how he manipulates these exposés amongst the industry. It's great.
His narration at the start of the film as well to get you straight in there. Straight away, you're right in there. Mm. You're seeing Russell Crowe's character and you're having his voice. Perfect combo.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that after his character, spoiler alert, dies about two-thirds of the way in, losing that narration hurt the film a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just at the start. You hear it a few times and it's him essentially reading the reports he's writing in his sleazy rag, hush, hush. And it worked as a storytelling device. It caught you up to speed with where you were. And it was a shame when he died and that disappeared.
I also think it's a shame that we don't see much of him. I know he's on TV and he does all the...
It's always sunny in Philadelphia.
But that's it. We're not seeing him on the big screen.
Mm-hmm. No, he needs to go back on there. Basically, everybody in this film, can we just get them back on screen and...
Just a sequel. Where there's some of them resurrect from the dead.
The thing is, I would love to see a sequel to this film.
Or spin-off.
Generally speaking, I don't look for sequels of classic films because it tends to be diminishing returns. But at the end of this film, Ed Exley and Bud White are still living. Ed Exley's managed to wangle his promotion. Bud White's gone off to live in Arizona with Lynn. Those two could easily come back together. Now, this film was based on a James Ellroy novel, and I believe he used one of them. I think it might have been Bud White is in one of his other novels, but Exley isn't, or vice versa. But I'd love to see those two back together again, coming together for another case or something. And it's been 20 years since
I was going to say, has it been
one.
Too long?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
It is the thing at the moment where you bring a film back, like Ghostbusters, after 20 years, so why not? If you're going to do it with something decent. Not the bloody Matrix.
What's that reboot of the Matrix shit that they're talking about?
I read today, I don't know if it's true, but they said it's not. It's going to be a sequel. So it's the fourth one.
Oh, we don't need that either.
Christ.
Bloody hell. Really? Anyway, talk to me about the music in this film, Mark.
Incredible. And I think we do touch upon this on a lot of our rewatches and topics, but is it the greatest soundtrack ever when you're watching a 50s LA film?
Oh, it's beautiful. It captures the mood of the time as well.
So there's horns and the...
It transports you to that era.
Instantly.
It's beautiful. It really is a thing of beauty listening to that score.
I'm now in love with Russell Crowe. I was never a massive fan. I'm now going to go and watch a lot more of his stuff because I think, oh, he's amazing again.
I don't know how you weren't in love with Russell Crowe. I know he's done some shit. Like
what's that one he's on the boat?
A Master and Commander. That's crap. And there's one he did, I think, with Ridley Scott where he's in Wine Country or something. He's wearing making wine. It's an absolute toss as well. But if you watch things like this and Gladiator, even if it was in The Man with the Iron Fists,
no.
He is so good in that. It's a really daft film that Batista's also in, but he's a great screen presence. I love Russell Crowe. And he'll throw a telephone at you if you give him any lip. That's just the kind of guy he is. Love him.
I do love him a lot now from this film. And you've heard me say he should have got an Oscar for this. Right now, then, here's a question. Right. Those three lead roles, who would you give the Oscar to if they were all nominated?
You're the Academy. I'd say Spacey for me.
See, Spacey, for all that they're technically the three leads, I would say Spacey is deserving of a Best Supporting Actor Oscar because he's in it less than the other two.
Guy Pearce, man. Oh. Give him that award.
Yeah.
Is there any way that they could do it, like a three-way? Or?
Oh.
I mean, an award. Get your mind out of the gutters.
But yeah, it'd be a tough one, isn't it?
All of them.
Yeah.
At once.
Yeah. Just do it, yeah. Three-way.
Magnificent.
Anything else you want to say about this one? I've read all my notes and I can safely say that I'm just sitting here with a grin.
I'm satisfied.
So
yeah.
Loving it.
Do you know what? It's trickier to do a rewatch with a film that you universally love. It's easier to do a rewatch with a film that you like in some respects and hate in some respects because then you've got a broad breadth of things to talk about. I have nothing. I have nothing bad. I can't say, oh, this bit should have been improved. This bit could have been better. I can't do it. I just love this film so much.
That's not a bad thing. No. The people out there now are listening going, I'm going to watch it tonight.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's just harder to do a rewatch conversation on.
I mean, maybe they could have put Purple in the end credits. Yes. I don't know.
Yeah, how dare they? Yeah. It's a 2 out of 10.
Yeah, must try harder.
Let's score it then.
Yeah.
Can I go first?
Go on.
10 out of 10. Yeah. Masterpiece. Would say it's one of the greatest films ever made. It's by far the best Kevin Spacey film. It's by far the best Russell Crowe film. It's perfect.
I did have it as a 9, but fuck it. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. It's just, it's beautiful. Everybody needs to see this. If you haven't seen this, go and get it on Blu-ray, get it on DVD, watch it on TV. Just be involved in this film. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's magnificent. 7 out of 10. Of course it's a 10. It's perfect. It's flawless.
I've not seen us all smiling this much on a rewatch since probably The Thing.
And do you know why? It's because it's one of those films that slips under the radar that people forget about. Yeah. Like, as you say, Mark, you haven't seen it in a decade. People forget about it. They sleep on it. And then when they come back to it, they go, shit, I forgot how great this film was. It's a surprise, a pleasant surprise. So skip to the end score for LA Confidential, 10 out of 10.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my choice for the next rewatch, and I'm
beat that.
Don't fuck it up.
We're gonna call it a quit now on the rewatch because we can't ever top that. I've been having a long think for the last couple of weeks, and for the listeners out there, these guys never know. This is a surprise when we announce the film. That's why the reactions are real and might burst your eardrums.
I'm stepping away from the microphone now.
Well, it's not that good, so don't worry.
Good.
But I remember when we did Crash, which is a controversial film, and I liked talking about that. Now, there's another controversial film that's all about religion, And it's, for me, a very good film, and I'm really, really looking forward to hearing your reactions. You have seen it before, and it is from Kevin Smith.
Oh, for
fuck's but it's one of his finest pieces of work.
Veto.
We are going to be watching...
Veto.
Dogma.
All right, then. I'll watch that one. If he'd said Red State, it would have been an absolute veto.
Dogma on the next episode. As you just heard from that incredible theme tune there, it's now time for a brand new game show called High Five.
High Five!
It's completely new, it's completely fresh, so I need to basically tell you the rules as if you've never ever heard of it. So High Five is a very simple game. It's a team game. I don't want it to be too much rivalry. You know, on these episodes, we're always going head to head. Ben and Gemma, you two are playing as a team together, so let's call it Team Bemma.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yeah. Or Team Gem.
Team Jen.
So Team Jen is here today. You two are working together. Quite simple. I've put 10 quotes in a little pot. All you're going to do is take out one of the quotes, you're going to read it out to the other person, and they need to guess the film it's from and the character that said that quote. That's it. Simple, isn't it?
Straightforward, yeah.
That is easy as chips.
You're going to get 1 point for the film and 1 point for the quote. Now, if you remember... a while back, we did a game quite similar. But if you have it repeated and you want a second time to hear it, you only get half a point. So maximum points each time, 2. Over the game, you should get 10, maybe 20 if you're really good, but only half a point if you need it repeated. Are you guys happy and ready to start?
Yeah. Well, seems pretty straightforward, I
guess. Most podcasts could do a game like this.
Yeah.
This is easy.
There's a catch.
Oh.
So you know it's called High Five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some helium gas involved here because we can't just have a normal quote. Whoa. It's too easy. It's a bit too much like the Imitation Game.
Yeah.
So what you're going to do is when you pull the quote out and just before you read it out to the other player, you're going to take a big balloon full of helium, which I just want to say, we actually have an expert here called Ron who works at Clinton Cart, who's supervising to make sure health and safety in that.
Ron?
Yes, Ron. Yes.
Is this safe?
Very safe indeed.
Oh, we're fine then.
Thanks, High five, Ron.
Thank you. See you, Ron.
Bye-bye.
So are you guys okay with that?
Yeah.
Thanks again to Ron for coming down just for that little 10 seconds. That's really good of you.
Mark, this piece of paper here, that's my next of kin. So if you need that, there you go.
Brilliant. Yeah, and on my right wrist is my medical bracelet, so feel free to give him a call.
Both comfortable with the rules?
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I'll do it.
Are you sure?
I will be the canary down the mine.
Okay.
Are you ready, Gemma?
I'm ready.
I'm going to take my first huff.
Okay.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Right. Do you want to take a guess?
I do.
Am I back to normal? Surely you know the film, even if you don't know the character's name.
You can have it repeated if you want.
Which means me taking another huff.
I think you should. There's no way you want to risk not getting 2 points straight away, so have it repeated.
Okay, let's repeat this.
Oh, Christ, here we go.
Sorry, Ben.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Are we going to be passing? I've got to be quite strict. Okay. I want to get home at some point.
Brilliant. Planet of the Apes.
Oh dear.
I know it's wrong.
Unfortunately, we started with no points at all, Ben.
It was Howard Beale in Network.
Ah, oh, iconic.
Yeah, superb film.
Son of a bitch.
Your turn, Gemma.
Good morning, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Oh, shit. Oh. I know it as well. Truman in The Truman Show. Truman
2 points.
Truman Burbank, I think his name is. Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yay me.
So it's a great start there. 2 points for the team. Remember, it's not against each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can we top this, Ben?
We're doing all right. Okay. Here we go. I'm pulling one out.
I got arrested for that once.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
You can have it again.
Oh, I know. I can't put Ben through that.
At this point, I feel like I'm levitating. I don't know how much more we need.
We've drank one, two, three, four bottles of cider, three cartons, and a good
a balloon and a half of helium.
Helium. But luckily, the guy's here supervising.
Ron,
is it all right, Ron? Are we okay?
Yes, just a little bit more.
That's fine.
Toy Story and Woody.
Unfortunately, you've not had a good start. Who Fair framed play. Roger Rabbit?
Uh-huh. Great film. Really?
Make sure Ben can't see.
Okay.
I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
That is... Okay, now I know the answer to this, but I want to hear her do it again. So I'm willing to take the point reduction just because I want to hear Gemma do that again.
I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I'm amuse you.
Even her laugh has gone like this. That's like Minnie Mouse.
It sounds like the witch in...
What, the Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz, yeah. That's amazing.
The answer is Tommy DeVito in Goodfellas.
Right.
1 point. Yeah. Fantastic.
I'm happy to take the point today. I just needed to hear that again. Right, here we go then, my turn again.
I'm just one stomach flu away from my goal weight.
Oh god.
I would never have got that one.
Oh my god. The actress is Anne Hathaway. Is it The Dark Knight Rises, Selina Kyle?
Unfortunately, Ben.
It was Emily from The Devil Wears Prada. That was hard, man. That was really tough.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Right, take your time.
Okay. Ready?
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
It's the laugh.
Oh, see, that quote has been used in several movies. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Shit. I remember it being used by DMX in a film.
DMX.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's not that one. Okay, then. I'm going to say it was The Usual Suspects. And I'm going to say the character was it Verbal Kint?
It is.
Hey! 2 points.
Okay.
All right, Jim, you ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
All right, hold on.
Okay.
Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to seduce me, aren't you?
It's The Graduate. It's definitely The Graduate. And the chap's name, I think it's Ben. Ben? Benjamin.
Yeah!
Yay!
How ironic that Ben said it.
It was meant to be.
Not irony, coincidence, but okay.
So just to let you know, guys, at the moment you're on 7 points, which I think is a very well-respected score for a brand new game.
Awesome. Right.
Thank you, honey. This is a beautiful party. You invited all my friends. Good thinking.
It's the laugh. I have absolutely no idea what that is, but I want to hear it again.
Thank you, honey. This is a beautiful party. You invited all my friends. Good thinking.
So there's definitely some form of accent there. It sounded Eastern European. Oh, shit. Oh, God, I don't know.
The greatest film of all time.
It's not The Room, is it?
Yes!
That was Johnny.
Yes!
Christ.
You invited all my friends. Good thinking.
Good thinking. Although, I don't know why I sounded so Mexican. Oh,
yeah. So I only got 1 point for that, didn't I? Because I heard it twice.
Mm.
That's fine.
You got 8 points.
It was worth it. It was worth every second.
Yeah.
So, guys, we've got two left. And as it stands, you are on 8 points.
I'm high as fuck. Right. Hold on then.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Yeah.
Right then, Gemma, it's, 2 points up for grabs.
It's Braveheart and it's William Wallace.
Fantastic.
Correct. Yes.
Holy Christ. I think I might have took too much then.
Freedom.
Right, we're on 10 points. So the very final one.
Okay.
You had me at hello.
It is Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
But I don't know Renee Zellweger's character name. So I'm just going to say her name is Diane.
Ooh, so close.
What is it?
Dorothy.
Oh, it began with a D. I wouldn't say it was close. But I got a point.
That's a point. So guys, you've got 11 points. Let's have a round of applause. Yay. Good going.
Thank you. I'm very impressed right now.
Yeah, we did pretty well, didn't we?
Yeah.
Skip to the end. Yeah.
So thank you very much, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this, and it'll be back in 2 weeks when Ben is going to be the Games Master, and it's Team Memma. Stick around for that. We're almost at the end, but as always, some good old listener questions. Declan Hayes has started with best and worst ever use of CGI.
Ooh.
Birdemic is the worst. can you consider that CGI, though?
I don't know, it's like MS Paint, aren't
they? Yeah, Microsoft Paint, cut and paste, just birds.
Oh, God, the baby in the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn is nothing short of dog shit. Mm. It's awful. It's terror. It's like stuff that haunts your dreams.
The worst for me is Scorpion King.
That
the
is
Rock.
Bad, yeah.
That's so bad.
I think the worst for me is it the third Matrix one? When you've got Mr. Smith and Neo fighting and their bodies look like they're made of spaghetti. They're so bendy. God. They don't look human in any way, shape or form.
Like locusts.
Let's be positive. The best use.
I don't know if this is the best. It's just one I saw recently. But the CGI baby in Children of Men is actually really, really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because of the timing, the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, just because it still looks good now so many years later. It isn't the best because we've got stuff like Interstellar now. But for its time...
Is that CGI? I thought it was animatronic.
I think it's a bit of both.
You're just guessing, aren't you? I'm hoping.
Come on, Gemma, save me. I'm drowning.
Drowning. A Perfect Storm. The massive tide at the end.
That's pretty damn
That's
good.
That's insane. Yeah, that one.
On Twitter, we've got Mr... MC Crystal, the best ever Michael J. Fox film after Back to the Future.
Teen Wolf.
Good shout. The Frighteners.
Oh, The Frighteners.
Oh,
or
yes!
is it called Doc Hollywood? Is that, I can never remember the name of the film.
When he has to do community service at hospital?
No, it's not that one.
Oh. The Burbs?
No. Is he in The Burbs?
I don't know. Probably not.
Oh, okay, I'll go with Frighteners then.
Yeah, happy with that one? You want to change your mind?
Oh, I want to change it to The Frighteners. That's an ace film.
Now, Gemma, do you want to go and have a pint or something? Because we've got 3 questions this week just for Ben.
Big time.
What the?
That annoys me.
Come on, let's go grab
it's
a brothers.
Time.
We'll grab a brothers, it's fine.
So first of all, quick one from our good friend Lyndon. He wants to know your thoughts on Legion.
I'll tell you what, Lyndon, I bloody love it. It is trippy as balls. I think I've seen the first 5 episodes, however many have been on Fox. It's a fantastic show. And it's completely unlike anything I've seen in superhero films and TV. I read a brilliant article the other day, actually, that was talking about the difference between the DC in-house films and TV shows, the Marvel in-house TV and films, and then the Fox ones. They were saying with Marvel, all of their films are light and fluffy and bright, but all of their TV shows, especially the Netflix ones, are dark and gritty. They said that DC is the other way around. All of their films, Batman vs. Superman, etc., are dark and gritty, but their TV shows, Supergirl, The Flash, are light and fluffy. And they said that Fox is the best studio because they don't adhere to those rules. Everything they do is wildly different. So, for example, Deadpool was this smutty comedy. Logan was this gritty western. X-Men Apocalypse was a pretty straightforward superhero film. Legion, however, is basically like Twin Peaks. It's this bizarre, trippy, wonderful thing. And I absolutely love it. I am sold on it all the way.
Once it's all out, I'm going to give it a watch. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to kind of binge watch it. Mm-hmm. I can't. There's still quite a few to go, isn't there? So
yeah, I think there's only 2 or 3 episodes. There's only 8 in the season.
That's what I like as well.
And he said Twin Peaks, so
yeah, sold. KO has asked, Ben, listening back to old episodes, how do you feel now versus back then on the release of John Wick 2?
I'm hoping when you say KO, that was WWE superstar Kevin Owens.
Yes, he's
well,
listening.
Kev, I'm absolutely delighted with John Wick 2. I didn't think it was quite as good as the first, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Don't care what we think anymore,
no,
Jen.
No, it's fine.
And Quinn Jupiter has put, Ben, you dislike universally loved films quite a lot starring Tom Hanks. I think he probably means. But surely you like Captain Phillips.
I like Captain Phillips very much. Yeah, yeah. I'm the captain now.
There
so
we
that's
go.
A great film. And he is the archetypal everyman. The reason why Hanks has a career is that he's the best everyman in film. And he is so good as an everyman in Captain Phillips. He's a guy who just does the best he can do in that situation.
Nice. It was my Tom Hanks movie masturbate choice
Indeed.
As well.
Yeah.
Gemma, no one cares what you think right now. It's just for Ben.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Can we rename this Ben Cast?
Skip to the Ben.
Yeah.
Masturbators have asked, if you had the golden ticket from The Last Action Hero, what movie would you burst into?
Ah, I like that.
That's a good question. For me, and it's... I've got two choices, okay? So Jurassic Park is something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
So once when I watched it, even though I'll probably get eaten and killed while I'm taking a shit, the fact is to go there and actually experience it when it isn't all going crazy would be amazing, all those pterodactyls and all that. But
all the what?
Dinosaurs.
No, say it again.
I think I said pterodactyls.
No, that's wrong.
Oh, wow, that is wrong.
Pterodactyls.
The P is silent.
Pterodactyls.
I think I've got like 2 hours through today without actually making a big mistake. But Back to the Future 2. Just go in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hill Valley Man.
Oh, Willy Wonka in a chocolate factory.
Oh, yes.
Just to walk into that factory and have like chocolate rivers and Gene Wilder singing a beautiful little song with a daffodil teacup.
Not Johnny... Johnny Depp. You want Gene over Donnie.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Wow. Said everybody else in the world as well.
It would be Empire Strikes Back, but it would be specifically Bespin Cloud City.
Wow.
I'd want to go and hang around Bespin with Lobart and the gang. Unreal.
I wish that was an actual real thing that we could
go
and do. Jaw the Explorer has said, with Transformers coming out, Ghost in the Shell, and a brand new Blade Runner film, are robots and androids the new zombies? It does seem a lot more now that the zombies are being faded out.
It's funny, isn't it? Because everything is cyclical. So we had this maybe half a decade to almost a decade of vampires, all that Twilight garbage that people should be murdered for watching. And then it went zombies were the big deal. And now it's robots, androids, etc. again. And then in the next 10 years it'll be werewolves.
Or bears.
Or bears,
yes.
Maybe.
Bears and wolves.
Yeah, werebears. Imagine that.
Bearwolves.
Oh, it's getting better. Suki Carr has said, you recently talked about your TV shows that make good films, but in your opinion, what is the best film that's now had a decent TV adaptation?
Fargo.
Oh, yeah. Shit, yeah,
that, it is that.
Bollocks!
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to get in there.
Absolutely. And season 3 is coming soon.
Oh,
cannot
my God.
Wait.
And unrecognisable Ewan McGregor as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Ooh. Playing twins or something, isn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
Madness.
He just looks like a thumb.
Richard Owen, what movie in the history of cinema would you just erase from existence? Be careful here, because that's a big, big statement. We've done the whole forgetting about, but it's just erased.
Okay. Because I love Dumb and Dumber so much, get rid of Dumb and Dumber and Dumb and Dumber 2, because it tarnished the legacy as a great comedy for me.
It's a tricky question, because you've got to take account of the whole butterfly effect, haven't you? So if you, for example, if you'd have got rid of the first Star Wars prequel, which is garbage, or any of the other Star Wars prequels, we might not be in the situation we are in now where we have Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to think about the knock-on effect. So I'm going to go with a film that hasn't yet been made. So it is the upcoming remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yes.
With Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway. I want that stricken from the record to cease to exist, to never be. Speaking of Anne Hathaway, have you seen the trailer for her new film Colossal?
No.
Have you heard of the film Colossal?
No.
Okay, so I don't love Anne Hathaway, but I really think this film's going to be good. It looks like a quirky indie where she plays a woman who, I think her husband has left her or something, so she's moved back into her hometown and she hangs out with her best friend Jason Sudeikis. And then she starts to realise that her thoughts and her movements control a giant monster that's destroying Korea.
Oh God, I want this so much.
So it's a kaiju film. It looks like Pacific Rim or Godzilla, but this beast that's destroying downtown Seoul is controlled by her, and it looks utterly, utterly mental.
Okay, I'm sold.
I want this in my
life. Watch the trailer for Colossal.
I'm going to.
Get in my eyes.
Imagine that, should we actually love her again?
Yeah. And the thing is, as much as I dislike her generally, I loved her in The Dark Knight Rises. I think she's arguably the best thing in it. I just hate her every other time.
James Gain, what film will always make you well up a little? So it's not a full-on cry, it's well up a little.
Oh, God. Well, I'm an emotional mess, so that really
doesn't... What's the film you cried at in the cinema?
La La Land.
Christ's sake.
I was trying to make you sound cool then.
I know. The They should have stayed together.
Grow up.
For me, it's her when he finds out it's not just for him, the operating system, and he finds out that it's for everyone. And that does, you just think, you poor bastard.
For me, it's Toy Story 3. It's when they're going into the incinerator and they hold hands, they accept their fate.
Yeah. Oh, God. Wally, when he's watching the Hello Dolly video and he realises he's alone and he just wants a companion, that makes me well up a bit. Oh, come on.
That's a good one.
This is what happens when you have ovaries and an emotional...
Oh, not a very feminist thing to say, is it? It's supposed to be all the same, aren't we?
Come on. Remember you're shaving your head for next week.
Need to unburn that bra, love.
Damien on Facebook has said, who would you cast in a live-action movie of Archer?
John Hamm. Absolutely John Hamm.
Yeah, why not?
John Hamm. He is Archer. And oh my God, he'd be such a fucking good Archer as well.
The thing is, though, H. John Benjamin's voice is so perfect that I'd want it to be John Hamm, but I still want John Benjamin to do the voiceover.
Oh, could John Hamm lip sync to H. John Benjamin?
Yeah. Do it. Which is the same thing I just said, I use the words voiceover and you use the words lip sync, which means the same thing, effectively.
Take that side off.
Thanks, Gemma.
These are the questions I love the most, okay? Martin Summers, Robocop or Terminator? That's.
See, my instinct is Robocop. I think I love Robocop more than I love either Terminator film. We're only talking about the first two, the rest don't count.
Yeah.
But because there are two fantastic Terminator films where there's only one fantastic Robocop, does Terminator win it by the sheer numbers? I'm going with Robocop.
I'm going Robocop. Even though Terminator 2 is a masterpiece, Robocop is Robocop. It's one of the most violent, great individual films.
Yeah, you sold me on violence there. Yeah, Robocop.
Perfect. Ryan on Facebook has said, Mark and Ben, you guys get to sit down for a beer.
The fuck?
Gemma's furious over
here. Don't worry, because you can also contribute to this. So
just off the sidelines.
Mark and Ben, you are still quite new. Mark and Ben meet Commode and Mayo in a pub. Mm-hmm. What is the thing you start the conversation with before Mark talks about Jaws?
My thing would be, Commode, what's going on with that hair?
Yeah.
That quiffy thing that he's got going on. It's just, what decade are we in?
I would say, hey, how's it going? Pretty good to both be voted in the Film 4 top podcasts in the world, isn't it? And he'd be like, yeah, it is. And I'd be like, so, Jaws. Come on, Gemma, what would you say?
Well, I'm at the bar with Edith Bowman talking about a cracking score from, like, Lost in Translation, so I don't care.
Nice. That's nice.
As long as you're getting the drinks in, I'm happy.
Bodney76, people now want stuff instantly. Are we at the point where we release a film for the cinema and at home simultaneously? At the same time.
Simultaneously.
So are we at the point now where it should just be today it's out in the cinemas and at home on demand?
Certainly something in the future. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see this maybe in 5-10 years' time.
No, it's already happened. It happens with Netflix.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Netflix will release a film that they have for themselves to go out on their service, but then they'll put it out theatrically so that it can then qualify for the Oscars and stuff. So it does happen. You get films that are released on video on demand and theatrically at the same time. It will go more and more that way, but the owners of the theatre chains, the cinema chains, will keep fighting against it because they're the ones who are going to lose out. We as consumers, it's going to get better for us, but it's going to take money out of their pockets.
I think that's probably what I was thinking in terms of, like, in the future. But I mean, ultimately, we win. Surely, we would win.
It would help piracy as well.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Martin Street, what character from the Marvel Universe would make the worst ever flatmate? The Hulk, because he's so big. He'd be doing my head and knocking the doors through. Every time he got angry, like, oh, look what's on TV. I don't want to watch this. Well, I want to. You know what I mean? Every 2 minutes, everything would get destroyed.
Probably Thor, because he'd probably put the hammer on the toilet seat and you'd be like, oh, I really need to go.
Good point.
Spider-Man, because he'd have that sticky web all over the place. Wouldn't he? You know what teenagers are like.
That's why I'll never live with you.
Yeah, can't go in the bathroom.
And the very final question for today, Charlie Archer, the best movie director to rise to prominence in 5 years. Ben, I'm going to have to ask your assistants here. What's the director from Sicario?
Denis Villeneuve. We call him Denis Villeneuve, but it's Denis Villeneuve.
Apparently. That's who I'm going to pick, because I think in 5 years, we're not looking at the bigger picture here, we're only looking at the last 5 years. Surely he's got the best CV right now, apart from Arrival.
Damien Chazelle.
Oh, shit, yes.
Because he's going to be doing a biopic about Neil Armstrong with Ryan Gosling, First Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's 2 for 2.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what?
He's 2 for 2. He's 2 for 2, Mark.
1 for 2 with me, but okay, that's still not bad, is it? Jordan Peele, looking good, oh, you know, we talked about him today. There's loads. It's a great time at the minute for young directors.
Keep your questions coming. Thank you so much, everyone. We've run out of time for all these, but we'll keep them coming. In 2 weeks' time, we'll answer them all again. So basically go on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email us. Just go on skiptheend.co.uk and seriously, we'll answer everything in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of another Skip to the End podcast. Another damn good one, but aren't they all these days?
Well,
I just,
yeah.
I still look at it now, episode 67. If you think every episode's 2 hours, that's about 130-something. You could listen to us every day for a week now.
Yeah.
All day, every day, 24 hours a day for a week.
Yeah. That's a challenge out there if anyone wants to do that.
If you do, you get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Book a week off work, listen to us non-stop.
Facebook stream it.
Live stream it, and then you get a T-shirt and maybe a key ring.
No, just a T-shirt.
Lots of good stuff coming up on the next episode, though. Gemma, what's the topic going to be?
We're going to be discussing our top 3 films from the 1960s.
Which is going to be great, because I don't think we've really touched on the 60s at all. It's a great era for film, and we've barely scratched the surface.
So it should be a really interesting one, see what we all bring to the table.
Plus all the fans that miss Skip Back in Time, you kind of get a little bit of that again.
Absolutely. Mark, what's our rewatch going to be?
Kevin Smith's masterpiece, Dogma. And it is going to be a film that we get Ben praising a film that is his.
Yeah, it is the one film of his that I'm known to like, but I haven't seen it in a long time. So I don't know. Maybe it's dog shit. Maybe I'll...
Dogma, dog shit.
He's like, well, that's my review done.
Ben's skipping the next episode.
Speaking of the review, what's the main film? Is it Ghost in the Shell?
It certainly is.
In the Shell.
Wow, we were. Now, as a huge fan of the original anime, I'm really, really excited for this.
As a huge fan of Scarlett Johansson, I'm really excited for this.
I'm not as excited as Marcus, but I'm excited. No boner here.
Yeah, Mark's end of the table is just lifted up 2 inches,
like
which
a tripod.
Is suspicious.
2 inches, I wish.
Plenty of other stuff on the next episode as well. We'll have the second round of High Five.
High Five.
Who are we masturbating over?
That's a great question. Who are we?
It's going to be Ben Stiller.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
It will be.
It'll be a bit of fun, won't it? He's done a lot of good films. Not just comedic. He's done some dramatic roles as well. So, you know, there's a lot out there. So lots of good stuff to listen to. See you in 2 weeks. If we ain't got that, then we ain't got much. We ain't got nothing. Give us some love. To give me some